Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the COVID-19 telephone town hall hosted by Senator Nancy Skinner. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Senator Nancy Skinner. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thanks so much. Hello, everyone. I'm Senator Nancy Skinner. I greatly appreciate your joining our call and RSVPing and, of course, sending in your questions in advance. I also want to thank my staff for preparing and organizing this event and, of course, the experts who've joined us. Before I begin to describe to you our wonderful experts, I want to sort of alert you all, in case you have not heard, that our five Bay Area counties today announced an extension of the shelter in place, and they added a couple of new restrictions. We will send out information about that as an email to everyone on our Senate email list. If you have any colleagues or friends who want to receive the emails that my office sends out, please go on to my Senate website, and it allows you to easily, you or other people, to enter your email address so we can get these updated information out to you and also notices of any future town halls. Now, let me describe the wonderful experts who will be joining us and talking. We have Dr. Allison Briscoe-Smith, who is a clinical psychologist and a faculty member at the Wright Institute and formerly headed up the mental health services or program services for Oakland Children's Hospital. She's going to give us some practical suggestions for all of us on coping, but especially tips on talking to children and teens and dealing with, now that many of us are home with children or other family members that we never previously spent so much time with. Dr. Briscoe-Smith will be followed by James Baraz, who teaches meditation at Spirit Rock and is affiliated with UC Berkeley's Science Center for Good. He will help us with strategies to deal with anxiety and fear and other calming techniques. Then James Baraz will be followed by Dr. Amy Ahlfeld, who is a psychologist in private practice, and she'll talk about what she's doing to help her clients and also relay some hotlines and other resources that are available to any of us if we hit a crisis point. Then we will hopefully be joined by Jillian Finn, who is the lead social worker at our East Bay Community Clinic's Lifelong Medical, and I will describe her once she joins us. After our speakers, I, Senator Skinner, will ask the questions that our audience submitted, all of you, in advance so that our experts can respond. If we don't get through all of your questions, then my office will respond to them individually. Lastly, just a reminder, tomorrow is Census Day. So please fill out your census form at my2020census.gov so we can make sure in the future that California and each of our communities and neighborhoods get the federal resources we deserve. So please fill that out. And now, allow me to turn this over to Dr. Allison Briscoe-Smith from the Wright Institute. Dr. Briscoe-Smith.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Senator Skinner, and thanks for everyone being on the panel and to everyone that called in. It's really a great opportunity to be of service in this moment. And I'm just going to spend a couple minutes talking about what it's like in the context of children and in parenting, and just pull from actually a lot of resources that I'm learning from the people that I'm in service with, and then also just some best practices. I tend to focus on trauma in particular, and have worked in hospitals and schools, so I'm going to just bring what those communities have really shown us here. So just really thinking about just a couple of different tips that I wanted to kind of take us through. So especially in terms of parenting, you know, parenting is always a struggle anyway. Many of us are finding us, you know, suddenly at home with our kids all day while trying to balance, trying to work, and also trying to provide for the educational experiences too. There are also many of you on the line that have to go out and work while also balancing having your children at home. So just a couple of different ideas about how we can try to manage this. The first one is to put our own oxygen mask on first. You've heard this term before, but really we need to be focused on how it is that we can be well so we can be in service and in connection and in care with our children. So we've got a couple of other panelists that will give us some real concrete tools for how we can be well, but it really is the idea that we've got to be able to do whatever we can to be as well as possible during this really extraordinary level of stress. So just one little tip is create a list of little things, tiny things that bring you joy, something like a pair of socks that you like or a stretch that you like or an old book. So nothing fancy, nothing you know, that requires a whole lot, but some small thing, and try to do that small thing once a day. The other thing is I spend a lot of time talking with families about what it is that they can tell their kids. But I wanted to actually back up and do something else, which is to listen to our kids first. So remember that our children are seeing and listening a whole lot. So I have a 2-year-old and a 9-year-old and 11-year-old, but my 2-year-old, who I was sure didn't know what was going on, made a clinic for all the babies in the house and took their temperatures the other day. So in other words, she's aware. So we need to pay attention that our kids are making sense of this. So start first by asking them how they're understanding what's going on. This includes our teenagers, too. Let's ask them, what is this like for you? What is it like not being at school? What do you want to know about what's going on? After we've done our job listening, then I'd really suggest that we should then think about what we want to tell them. Let's not overpromise. We don't have dates. We don't have big solutions. So don't overpromise. You can say things like, I don't know the answer to that. But work really hard to kind of create a context of space and safety right now. I don't know the answer to that, but maybe we can figure it out. I don't have the answer to that, but I know right now you're here in space. Last couple pieces, which is that we should all have a grace period. I know a lot of people are really struggling to do their best in this moment, but this is a big learning curve. So let's just cut our kids some slack and cut ourselves some slack. This may not be the moment to get all A pluses. Our A plus moment right now is being well. So a little bit of grace might go a long way here. It's really important that we all get movement towards some small concrete action. That might be something like writing a letter, connecting up with someone by phone. Simple things like that might be helpful. The last piece that I really want to pay attention to is this is a moment to recall our resilience. This is something that is really important for all of us, not just in the context of parenting. Yes, this is an extraordinary event. Yes, this is unprecedented, but everybody that's on the phone call has made it to the phone call because you survived something. And if it wasn't you, then it was your parents that survived something or your grandparents that survived something. This is a beautiful moment to recall those lessons of resilience and to tell those to our children. That's going to help them get grounded. That's going to help us feel resilient, and it's going to be something that only fills the time, but will help us. And that's the thing that's helped us all the way through so many different challenges. So those are the pieces that I'd like to kind of, that I kind of hit up relatively quickly, but that I'm really learning in community with so many of you as parents and so many of you that are working real hard. So, you know, take care of ourselves, listen to what our children are going through, cut ourselves some slack and give ourselves some grace, and also remember that we come from resilient stock. So with that, I'd like to pass it on to our next panelist.
Thank you, Dr. Briscoe-Smith. That was very helpful. I'm sure we're going to have some questions around dealing with our kids, dealing with other family members, but we'll get to those. And I know that Jillian Finn, has joined the call, so maybe we can turn to her next. And just a reminder to those of you who may have joined the call late, I'm Senator Nancy Skinner, and you have joined our third telephone town hall, which is on staying calm, resources for coping during this corona crisis. Jillian Finn, who is our lead LCSW at Lifelong Medical, is going to talk a bit about just what she's hearing from clients, but also some about those who are in recovery and what you know, what tips they may have now that it's much harder to access some of the resources that those of us in recovery may have utilized. And I just want to express before we go further that I'm sure, like all of you, I myself has, you know, I go up and down. I have moments where I'm in a panic about either family members who have lost their job or whether we, you know, just whether we're in a situation where we're prepared enough or whether some family member of mine who is in one of the essential jobs is exposing him or herself and will they get sick. So like all of us, I am, you know, I have moments where I can't sleep. And so I think this, the various tips and advice that we're going to get from all of our speakers will be helpful to all of us since we're in a marathon, not a sprint. Jillian, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Nancy, and thank you so much for holding this town hall. And, you know, I just would like to reiterate what I think everybody is saying, and that is, if you're listening, you are not alone. You're not alone in your fear and your anxiety and your worry and your uncertainty. But you're also not alone in that we live in a part of the world where hundreds of helpers of every kind and at every level have geared up to help. So, as Nancy mentioned, I work for Lifelong Medical Care, and our entire system of health care in a week converted to provide telehealth, which is amazing. And at the same time, insurers decided that they would cover telehealth, which they never used to do, so that there are new resources out there now that weren't there before. And certainly, I've spoken to, you know, we have about 50 behavioral health professionals in Lifelong who are conducting their normal work via either phone calls or video conferencing. And we all see high anxiety everywhere. And so, you know, I do want to just mention a very practical way that I hope everybody will think about this. We may not be able to manage the outside world very well, but with intention, we can learn how to manage ourselves, and that is the most important thing for us all right now. So I'm going to run through some of the very basic self-care issues that I think are important for everybody, and perhaps especially for people who are in recovery, and that is that you need a regular routine. Please don't, because you don't have to be somewhere, don't sleep until 10 and stay in your pajamas all day, right? Get your regular sleep schedule, get up at the usual time. It's also really important, continue to bathe regularly, dress as if you were going to see other people in the world. Eat your regular meals, even if your appetite is down a little right now, or don't overeat. That's, a lot of people have told me that stress has caused them to overeat. Be aware of that. Exercise. You have to find alternative ways to exercise. We can't all go for hikes, right, or run as much as we used to, or go to Zumba classes, those kinds of things. But this is where, actually, technology can really help us. In my household, we started looking on YouTube, and, you know, even armchair aerobics can get your blood circulating, and you feel better after you've done that kind of thing. And talking about you know, screens, please limit the amount of time that you watch the news. It's often pretty sensational. For myself, I find my anxiety level rising every time I turn on and everything is focused on coronavirus. I watch as much as I need to know how to take care of myself, and then I do not watch the rest because, sadly, what can I do about New York except hold them in my prayers, right? So limiting watching the news, finding ways to have fun with other people. If you are, as some people are, now shut up in a household with who knows how many, anywhere between 6 and 12 other people, you probably are going to get on each other's nerves. Find ways to have fun together. Play games, dance, do YouTube exercises together. If you're alone, and lots of people are, if you have a window that looks out on the street, please stand at it and smile and wave to people as they go by. try and be social in whatever way is possible for you to do that. And as you know, as Allison was saying, I totally agree with her. It's often very helpful to think of other difficult situations you've been in and how you came through them. You can do it. You know, you've survived this far, and now we have to learn how to survive and perhaps even thrive in the current circumstances. And I'm sure that a little later on we'll get into some actual breathing exercises and relaxation exercises. I know that the other speakers will also probably address those things.
Thank you, Jillian. Thank you so much. And that was Jillian Finn from Lifelong Medical. And now we're going to hear, again, this is Senator Nancy Skinner. We are now going to hear from James Barras, who has taught many people throughout the East Bay. I was surprised when I mentioned to folks, friends of mine, that he was joining our call, how many people that I know who have taken a class from him or done something online with him. So, James, I'm very, very glad you're able to join us, and I'm sure you'll have some good suggestions for us and maybe even an exercise or two. Go ahead, James.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Skinner. It's a real pleasure and honor to be here and feel a sense of community that we all so hunger for. It's kind of an interesting thing in this moment of isolation that we somehow feel more connected than ever as we're all going through something together. I just want to share a couple of simple, very effective practices that do help us put on our oxygen mask first, and then we can be with others. One is basic centering exercise of mindfulness. This is a word that now is very much in the mainstream toolkit of practices that make more effective well-being. It's taught in Kaiser, and Google teaches it to their workers, and it's in schools, and it reduces stress. And basically, it's a very simple thing. It's just knowing what is happening right now. The interesting thing is that when we get caught in fear and worry, which are all over the atmosphere here, understandably, it's always about the future. And that's where coming back to the present is really a refuge, is really a way to get out of the spin cycle in your mind and just come back grounded and be here on planet Earth in your home and feeling connected again with yourself as well as anyone that you're around. So very simply, coming back to your body right now as I'm speaking, you can just turn your attention to feel your hands where they are, whether they're in your lap or on your some other part of your body. Just feel your hands. Just direct the attention there. Feel your feet, whether they're sitting, you're sitting in a chair or standing. Just feel your feet and feel the earth underneath you. It's the literal grounding experience to feel the earth underneath your feet. You might take a look around your room right now. Just notice all the things that are there that you probably don't look at very carefully. Just look at your room and or wherever you happen to be. And as you're looking around, just take it all in. And you might notice that as you do that, your mind isn't thinking about the future. You're right here, right now. And, of course, one of the prime places to come back to is simply knowing that you're breathing. And so you might take a few deeper breaths. Probably you were taught as a little kid, take 10 breaths or just calm down and take a few breaths. Well, it's physiologically a very powerful thing to do. So right now as I'm speaking, just nice deep inhale. You might count to 4 as you hold it in. A nice deep exhale, count to 4. You hold it out and do that a few times, because the energy gets bottled up when we're caught in worry, and as we're breathing there's a place for that energy to go. And then at some point let the breath be nice and natural, let the breath breathe you. And again, feel yourself right here, right now, in this moment. So that's one very effective tool, just coming back to the refuge in the present. Another that I'd like to offer, this is more in holding your feelings when they get really away from us and stirred up and we don't quite know even how to come back to the present. This is a simple self-compassion exercise that is just holding everything that's going on. You don't have to try to make anything happen, but physiologically, this is a very effective way to calm down the whole system. First thing you do is just feel a tender touch. You might put your hand on your heart or somewhere on your face or give yourself a hug and let it be a tender touch that's just holding all of those feelings inside. And a few suggested reflections, one just acknowledging, oh, this is hard right now. This is a hard moment. And just naming it without spinning out about it, oh, this is a challenging moment. And then the next is to have a sense that you're not alone. Oh, think of all the people in the world that are going through what you're going through right now. I'm not alone. There's so many people going through what I'm going through. And then just send yourself some kind thoughts. Let me hold this, all of these feelings, with kindness and compassion. And as you're doing that and holding your body with that tender touch, there's a one inside that needs comforting and the one wise one that can comfort her or him. And so those are a couple of different possibilities and to reduce the stress. And then you can have a much more balanced and effective way to approach your experience. So I'll just stop here and let the other speakers go, and maybe I'll come back if there are any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, James. I did that. I breathed. I looked around my room. My feet felt more solid on the ground. It helped. Thank you. Again, this is Senator Nancy Skinner. It's our town hall on staying calm and coping. And now we will hear from Dr. Amy Allfield, who's a psychologist in private practice. And she's going to share with us some of what she's been talking to her folks in her practice and also some crisis lines because, you know, this is the kind of time some of us might hit a crisis and we really might need to reach out immediately to someone. Go ahead, Dr. Allfield.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Senator Skinner, and all of the other my colleagues that have just shared lots of great information. So thank you for that. I'm going to just take this into one way that I've been working with my clients and patients over the last month. One thing that's helped is to put this all in context of why people are feeling what they're feeling. Sometimes it seems like very matter of fact, of course, this is where I'd be feeling this is, you know, a national crisis, an international crisis. But I think putting it in the context of a lot of us are faced with a lot of loss and a lot of grief right now, whether it's, you know, capital L with loss, with people who are actually experiencing people in their families dying or getting sick with COVID-19, or just the and the losses that everyone at every level, whether it's loss of freedom, loss of economic certainty, loss of their normal routines, their loss of some people getting laid off, their loss of jobs, kids, loss of school. There's just a tremendous amount of loss that individually everybody is feeling and collectively this society is feeling right now. And I think it's important to, you know, to kind of see it in that context because then we can realize, okay, there are stages to grieving right now. One is just the denial of all of it, right, that, you know, this virus isn't going to affect me. You know, I think many of us have moved on to, have moved on from that stage to maybe getting angry about it. You know, why this is interrupting my normal? You know, this is I don't want to stay home so much. You know, I want to go to the parks and all of that. So of course, there's anger as well, and then maybe the bargaining, you know, stage, which is okay. I'll social distance or physically distance. If I do it for 2 weeks, it'll be over, right? Well, we know it's not over, right? So then we're left with sadness and you know, about I don't know when this will end, and people have missed out on all sorts of, whether it's, you know, just things they were looking forward to that they're not going to be able to do. And then there's some acceptance, and I think that's the key, is trying to get yourself to the acceptance. And me as a mental health provider, as a clinical psychologist, I'm trying to help people get to the acceptance, because once you have acceptance, there's freedom in figuring out, okay, well, I don't have to fight it. I just I'm going to take it in this moment, in this day, and figure out then what's my strategy to kind of be able to still have quality of life and be able to emotionally help myself and others through this. So I think there's that piece of it. I think, you know, the other thing is that just the uncertainty that all of this has brought, you know, uncertainty often triggers people's anxiety, because we are creatures of habit and like routines and regularity. And so there's also, you know, some of that is, you know, anyone who's even operated at any kind of anxiety level, if it's going to be spiked just because there's more uncertainty in our world right now than we're used to. And, you know, I think someone told me that the Chinese character for crisis is also the Chinese character for opportunity. So, you know, part of this is also, as we all have slowed down a tremendous amount, is looking for what is the opportunity in all this? Is there an opportunity for ourselves, right? Are we absolutely taking time to reflect on what's essential and what's not essential right now? And we're also trying to be flexible with ourselves, our kids, our families, and you know, and society and the world right now. And I think that is, you know, this gives us a chance to be able to do that. You know, what we focus on at this time, I agree with a lot of the other, you know, panelists or people that have shared about, you know, different tricks and tips of what to focus on and not watching media as much and trying to stay present. I would say that where you choose to focus your attention is where your feelings follow. So if you're, you know, focusing on, you know, all the things that bring you a lot of anxiety, you know, then what's going to happen is that's what you're going to end up feeling that way. So trying to find, you know, a way to, even in the worst of times, to find out what's still good in your world. Because all of us can find certain, you know, can point to, I'm sure, a dozen or more things that are still good in our world. And then the other social connection, and deliberately, you know, while it is social distancing, it's really physical distancing. It's not social distancing. We can still, you know, with technology and all of the ways that we are able to connect with people, you know, deliberately seeking out people and doing the stuff that makes you happy that is within the constraints of the physical distancing, do that. Because it's not necessarily, you know, it's trying every day frequently to find ways to feel some joy and not have negative emotions that, you know, usually stick to us like Velcro, but instead having positive emotions that can, that can stay with us more instead of bounce off of us. So having, you know, opportunities every day to do that, and finding those, really leaning on those strong and supportive relationships. And that will lead me to talk about, you know, our role as my role as a psychologist. You know, like I think Jillian said, you know, in a matter of a few days, most of us have converted to doing telemedicine and phone, you know, sessions with our current patients, and we're getting, you know, referrals for new, because people are needing extra support. And I would say, you know, this is an opportunity that nobody needs to go through this alone. If you don't feel like you have that support, you can absolutely, there are many of us that are waiting and available and want to make ourselves available to you. So anyone on the call who's listening, this is not something you need to go through by yourself. And there are certainly crisis lines, and I will give you a couple of those that you can call. And there's also, you know, Psychology Today websites. You can contact the California Psychological Association to find a psychologist locator. But there are, this is not the time to just, you know, grit your teeth and go through this alone. There are ways that we can connect, and keeping, you know, someone that, to provide psychological support and help you maintain, you know, your routines and your, you know, your psychological and emotional health. So, you know, and I think the other thing to say, and I'll give the list of the resources, but the other thing is that this is not going to end. People are going to need the support during and afterwards. People on the front lines, but even all of us that have, you know, whatever the end result is from having people, you know, in sheltered in for so many, you know, weeks at a time, people are going to need support even afterwards. So I think this is the time to take advantage of the mental health workers that are here to help you. Some of the, and I don't, I think,
You can just mention two crisis lines, and then we will definitely, my staff is
post this
research, and we will send out a follow-up blast, and we'll also have it on our website. But if you could mention one or two, that would be great.
Yeah. So, some of them are the crisis support line of Alameda County exists. There's a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And again, these will all be listed. I mean, there's a 1-800 number. I don't know if I should read the numbers, but there's
the number of the Alameda.
Read the number
of the suicide one. Yes.
Okay. So the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. The letters TALK or it's 8255. The Institute on Aging has a 24/7 friendship line, especially for people who are over 60 and have disabilities. That is 1-800-971-0016, or you can call 415-750-4138. There is also a crisis text line that is, you can text HOME to 741-741 to reach a trained crisis counselor. And then again, the California Psychological Association, which is CPA Psych, PSYCH, .org. You can go to find a psychologist, or Psychology Today is also a guide to therapists. Those are more crisis lines. And then there are certainly, there's a website that someone just provided through UCSF. That's psychiatry.ucsf.edu/coronavirus, and there are tons of resources there as well that may help. So hopefully that's of help, but thank you.
And we will, again, for those listening, I'm sure some of you couldn't write all that down, we will post those on our website as well as send out a follow-up email with the information. So this is now Senator Nancy Skinner. You are in our town hall around coping with this corona crisis, and I'm going to start reading some questions for our experts to answer. So this one, a person asked us, this person's an essential worker who's fighting intense anxiety, and they asked about if it's possible to file for temporary disability, which I know that they can if they have what's called SDI, whether their employer paid into it. But I think that my staff can answer this person's question about how to file. But why don't one of you, perhaps Dr. Briscoe-Smith or another, why don't you mention, what would you recommend if an essential worker who's got to go to work is fighting intense anxiety?
So this is Dr. Briscoe-Smith. I'll just weigh in as to, you know, the legal and the other kind of logistical pieces that you mentioned before. But I think also, as you've heard all the panels speak to, there are available means of trying to address and reduce the anxiety. So I'm going to kind of sidestep the legal kind of part and move more to the managing of the intense anxiety, of course, makes a whole lot of sense. And there are all the resources that have just been mentioned, the call lines, the therapists, and also something that can happen right there in the moment, which is breathing and grounding. And that there are those things available. I think it's really important that people feel like there is a tool that they can use to manage the anxiety. And so I'll let the other panelists speak to more specifics.
Is there one more person who wants to add?
This is Jillian Finn.
Go ahead.
Great. You know, just a couple of quick relaxation issues, that, techniques that you can use in the moment, all right? One I call the three-point relaxation, and what you do is, first of all, loosen your tongue and relax your jaw. Then relax your neck and your shoulders, and sometimes you need to roll your shoulders up in order to do that. And then have your hands go all floppy. And although that may seem, what, really? I found that most people find that that really helps in a moment of extreme stress or anxiety. And since you're out in the world and helping people, they won't even know you're doing that, but it does, it is extremely important to take a break from stress, even if it's just 10 seconds worth, and do that several times through the day. And the other, a very brief breathing technique, is the famous 415. Breathe in for 4, hold for 1, breathe out for 5. Since you're having to be active out there in the world, it's really important to practice these kinds of skills so that you can do them when it feels overwhelming in the moment.
Jillian, thanks. So the first one was just loosen your tongue and relax your jaw, then relax your neck and shoulders, roll your shoulders around, and then flop your hands.
Flop your hands. And what can be very interesting is sort of self-scale. How stressed out am I? 0 being, I'm not stressed at all, to 10, this is as stressed out as I've ever been. Do that exercise, and then scale again and see, okay, did I manage to bring it down from a 10 to a 9 or to an 8? And it's a good idea to practice these in calmer moments, too, so that it's more accessible to you when you really need it.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right, let's move on.
If I could brief, just following up on that, the flopping hands is in the direction also of releasing energy. And if you have the space to, and you're by yourself, to shake and to just really, if you can take a walk outside and get some space, but to actually physically discharge that energy, because it's built up in the system and it just needs some place to go. That's why deep breathing is so helpful, and also just shaking your body. If you like to dance, dance, or if you like to, but even just shaking and shaking, it's what animals do to relieve the tension when they have a traumatic event, and we can do it too.
So you helped here a little on this question, but this is from a senior who says, I have nothing to do. The senior center is closed. How do I keep my bones from becoming so stiff?
There are a lot of, this is Amy, and there are a lot of, you know, videos and people streaming from different yoga studios or just stretching exercises or taekwondo. You know, there are a lot of different free opportunities out there if you just, you know, look on a YouTube channel. And if you aren't able to figure that out, I bet calling a grandchild or a family member that may have more ability with technology, they'll be able to walk you through how to connect to those. But they're really, you know, this is a great time to be able to get back into doing exercise and physical fitness in a routine way.
And now, perhaps Dr. Briscoe-Smith, you can address this one. This, aside from distance learning, what other ways can we keep our kids or teens busy and engaged?
Sure. When I saw this question, you know, it made me think about why is it that we're keeping them busy? So keeping them busy, perhaps because we've got to go out to work, we have to do work there, is that. But I think other parents are really struggling with keeping them busy and kind of engaged in terms of they've got to learn. And I want to kind of hold on to, like, the capacity for our kids to learn and for us to learn during this time is different than it has been at other times. And that this is an opportunity for us to think about what is it that we'd like for them to learn. Maybe not all the you know, ABCs or the stats, but perhaps also learning how we overcome these things. So I want to challenge the notion of keeping them busy. I think it's okay to kind of give them an opportunity to do the things that they like to do, as much as that can be done inside. One of the things I really want to encourage parents to do, especially in the context of working, is perhaps just to give each of your children just a solid half hour of your time and attention, just 30 minutes. Ask the kid what they want to do and try to do that thing for 30 minutes. And even that is an extraordinary amount of time, and probably more than we were giving our kids when we were going out and about and working. But if we can give one of our kids 30 minutes of time, that's a big thing that we can help them to do. The rest of the time, reading, yes, screens are going to come about, but we're all learning to be with our screens in different ways. The thing that we have to moderate is making sure that they're not watching too much news coverage, and that they aren't watching us watch too much news coverage, or they're not watching us scroll through our phones on news coverage. So think about what it is that we're modeling for our kids with that. So I want to challenge the idea of busy, and also the idea that, you know, kids can entertain themselves in many different ways, and that what they really need is our attention for just a little bit of time, and that will make a big difference.
So I'm going to go now to those who may, we've had some folks submit questions about what resources are available for those who may be experiencing violence or feel unsafe in their homes. I don't know if Jillian, if you have an answer to that, or Dr. Amy Alfeld.
There are, you know, I don't have that in front of me, but there are very definitely domestic violence hotlines, Senator Skinner, and perhaps your staff could include those so that people could look at that. The one thing that we do know about violence and domestic violence is really challenging. In a sense, the most dangerous time is if somebody feels like they need to leave. So don't talk about it if you feel as if you do need to. Don't give the perpetrator a warning that you're planning to leave. Keep some money somewhere, all of your valuable papers somewhere where you know you could easily get them if you had an opportunity to quickly get away from the home, and you don't want your personal effects to be held hostage by somebody who is violent in your home. Violence and not feeling safe is a very complicated issue. If you're going to call the police because you feel unsafe, do so and discuss with them how you can stay safe from that moment on. It's a difficult time. People are trapped inside and probably much more irritable and angry with each other than they might normally be. If you really feel in danger, please don't just stick it out. Call and ask for help.
And we will definitely include in our resources outreach for any type of domestic violence or other violent situations. We will definitely.
Thank you. Yes, I think that that's extremely important.
Now, some people asked us, you know, that they feel more productive if they're helping people right now. And so one person wrote and said they found that sewing face masks and donating them to healthcare workers makes them feel a better sense of purpose. What other activities might they be able to do from home that might be helpful to others, give them a purpose? Anyone who has an idea. Otherwise, my staff will figure out some suggestions right back. But go ahead, if anyone has one.
Well, I would say this, you know, I think anytime we contribute beyond ourselves, it takes the focus out of ourselves and what we might be feeling and experiencing, but it also makes us, you know, feel better. And so, yeah, coming up with different ways to do that, no matter what age people are, even when we were talking about kids earlier, you know, I really see this as an opportunity for teens especially to, you know, kind of create their own projects that they're working on that they feel like have purpose or meaning. I happen to have two teens. I have one who's building a website. He's never built a website before. He's teaching himself to build a website for a nonprofit that he's creating to get first-gen soccer players into Division III schools. That's something as a passion. He plays soccer with a bunch of kids that will be first-generation college students, and this is something that's a passion of his. And so what a great opportunity to have all this time to do that. So that's a teen. I think at all, you know, we're trying to contribute beyond yourself, whether that's to the you know, pandemic that's going on. I heard some people at the local clinic that is near my house that the first responders kind of came to work and kind of all scattered throughout the entryway and walking to that particular clinic were all these thank yous that people had done in the community, and you know, just put them on the lawn there, sprinkle them on the lawn, and they felt like, you know, wow, this was unexpected and such a surprise, and people showing their gratitude for what these folks are doing. So I think it's just about creativity. You know, there's so many different ways to do that, whether that's, you know, in your own community, meaning your own circle, or contributing, you know, people calling their grandparents, the grandkids that maybe aren't in touch as much, but touching base every day with grandparents and sharing something new about their lives or about themselves, you know, is making a huge difference in people's, you know, feeling of isolation. So I think there's a lot of different ways to do that. It's just about expanding one's own creativity.
Another person asked, how can they just in general volunteer their time to help, and they didn't indicate any limitation, and I'll answer that one. If you feel, if you're not in the underlying health conditions or a person over 65, which are people most susceptible to the worst cases of coronavirus, though obviously we know that young people can also get very serious cases. But our food banks, Alameda County and Contra Costa County, both have food banks, as well as our Meals on Wheels programs. Both food banks and Meals on Wheels, believe it or not, had been dominantly volunteered by seniors. So in other words, other seniors were their biggest volunteer base. And of course, because seniors are staying home even more than others, though we're all sheltering in place, the Meals on Wheels and the food banks are in need of volunteers. So if that's something that you or people you know feel that they would be comfortable doing, then certainly go online to either Alameda County or Contra Costa County's food bank or our various Meals on Wheels, and there's many, and see what you can do. So now we're going to go to some coping strategies. And again, this is Senator Nancy Skinner, and so here's one of the questions that was submitted. The person wrote, I'm so stressed about my and my family's financial situation. I know evictions won't happen, and I know many of my family can get unemployment, but I don't know when the money will arrive. I'm not sleeping well. I don't know what to do.
Senator Skinner, this is Jillian Finn here.
Certainly.
I have a suggestion for folks, and that is, this is so with a lot of problems that feel overwhelming, and that is chunk it down. What I suggest to people is develop for yourself a timeline, and I'm thinking here specifically, for example, about finances, right? And look at it in terms of this week, 2 weeks' time, a month's time, 6 months' time, and look at when will it really matter? In other words, you can be looking at a problem and lumping everything together and really getting incredibly anxious about something that might not happen for 6 months. So chunk it down and look, is there any reason that I need to be really frantic about money for this next week? What about in 2 weeks? What's coming up so that you have something of a timeline about when you really will need money for, and then it's easier to actually do some problem solving.
Good. Does anyone else want to add to that?
I would just say that most often our brains go to worst case scenario, which is one extreme, and I would try to, you know, kind of combat that with best case scenario and probably figure that you'll land somewhere in the middle. But because why spend the time, you know, holding that worry about worst case when most likely that's not going to happen? You can, you know, combat it with best case, but most likely that also won't happen. And you'll be somewhere kind of in the middle. But in the moment, what you have control over is just what you do with your money in this moment, right? What you do in terms of your job in this moment. And there's only so much that's within your control. So just, you know, I like what Jillian's saying in terms of chunking it down and, you know, making kind of a plan, even a plan for now in terms of, okay, how much are you spending on groceries? I mean, right now there's not a lot of extra spending happening, you know, besides people's, you know, necessities. And so in some ways, okay, so you're not going to be, you know, spending frivolously, but, you know, and maybe making a living more simply may also help when this thing is over, no matter what people's economic, you know, status is at that point.
So now, James, see if you want to take a stab at this one, and then any others can join in. So the question was, how do I deal with my frustration and anger watching the news?
I wish I could say I was an expert in that, but I do know something about both getting frustrated and angry and working with it too. First, I, you know, as was mentioned by one of the other speakers, budget how much you take in. And one of the things that my wife and I do, we do watch the news. We budget it, but we always go to bed watching an episode of our favorite series. We're rewatching it, this kooky Australian series Offspring that just puts us in a good mood. So you can, if you are going to be watching stuff, make sure you watch stuff that inspires you or lifts your heart as well. The other thing that I keep in mind is that you don't know where this is all heading, and to draw conclusions about what the unfolding is going to be like. This, for me, this is a possibility, a potential of a tremendous awakening. Sometimes you need the craziness and the ignorance to wake people up. So I see the people who are doing stupid things as being very, very confused inside, and I try to turn my anger into compassion, because underneath the frustration and the anger, it hurts so much because we care. And so if we can get in touch with that caring that's underneath that frustration, that caring heart, and turn it into compassion, and also seeing that this is awakening. There's an awakening happening for all of us. It usually takes suffering to wake us up, and we're in a process of awakening. So I try to budget what I take in, but hold it in a much bigger picture than what's happening one day to the next.
This is Jillian again. Anger and frustration can also be great activators. So I'll be honest and say I'm a very political person, and I would suspect that some of the anger and frustration that some people may experience watching the news feels like it ought to have a political solution. So write letters. If you can afford to, donate a little to political candidates who you think represent the best that could happen in these circumstances. So I totally agree that we have to have compassion. That stops us from being cynical. Understand that a lot of people are doing the best they can. It doesn't look adequate to us, but that's the best that they can do, perhaps. But there are also people who are not behaving in a compassionate manner or in a responsible manner. And I think it's fine if, as members of the responsible public, we hold people accountable and try and change things.
Thank you for that addition, Jillian. So as I, Senator Skinner here again, Nancy, as I start to wrap up this call, there is one question that I'll answer, and that was someone submitted, not able to go into our regional parks as much now. They've closed the parking lots and such, and access to nature is really, I really need it. What can I do? So here's my recommendation. I mean, obviously, we can still go out and walk in our own neighborhoods, but there are some beautiful websites that give us live nature. There, right now here in Berkeley, we've got a nest of peregrine falcons on the Campanile, and there's a 24/7 live cam that you can watch the progress of the parents and the little the sitting on the eggs. And as soon as I don't know yet if any of the eggs have hatched, but anyway, that's one site. There's a San Diego Zoo has a panda site. The Monterey Bay Aquarium, you can watch the otters. That's on all the time. And there's so many sites like that that can give us either animals or nature, and I recommend that. It helps. And then I just want to remind all of my listeners, since so many questions we didn't ask, but questions were, again, about financial insecurity, I just want to remind you that PG&E and the other utilities will not be shutting off services, that they are not doing that any longer. Of course, if you can pay part of your bill, please do, but do not worry about your utilities being shut off. And, of course, you don't have to worry about being evicted. Again, if you can pay part of your rent, great, but that if that's one of those where, you know, you need to have instead, you need to cover your food or other basic expenses, but that has to wait a while, it has to wait a while. And then you can go on the federal FCC website, and we sent this out earlier, but for cell and internet carriers, they've made certain pledges around, you know, not cutting people off and such. So that's another thing that can limit your worry on the financial. Obviously, California's EDD, the unemployment office, is overloaded because there's so many people who have applied for unemployment, but they are processing as fast as they can. And they had experience in the recession, not with quite as big number as we're having right now, but they did have significant experience there, and they are putting all of that to use. And then finally, we've had some people indicate, you know, why isn't the state legislature in session? What are the assembly members and senators doing? We are all working. We are doing things like holding such town halls. We are having regular briefings by the governor's office. We are working with our counties to see what services and needs they have. And while we are not acting on legislation right now, and I would remind everyone that since there are California is a big state and legislators come from all over the state, and if we were to all fly in and meet, we would be vectors for this disease, which is something people do not want us to be doing, is having us or our staff spreading the disease around. So instead, we are working remotely, and we are also setting up the ability to be able to pass the budget and the bills, if necessary, remotely. So all of those things are underway, and you can have confidence that the legislature is actively working. So with that, it's 5:01. I want to thank my wonderful experts, Dr. Allison Briscoe-Smith from the Wright Institute, Jillian Finn from Lifelong Medical, James Baraz, our meditation teacher, Dr. Amy Offeld, who is a clinical psychologist, and again, all of you who listened and participated, my staff for putting this together. The town hall is taped, and it will be available on the website to re-listen, and then my staff will send out a summary of good resources in a few days. And with that, thank you all, and we will end the call. Thanks so much.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.